As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Welcome back, Prospects to Pros on the Athletic Podcast Network. I'm Dane Brugler. I'm joined as always by Lance Zierlein. Today, one of my favorite days of the year, the draft guide officially released. Hopefully you guys go check it out. It is included in your Athletic subscription, so well worth it. It's basically a year of my life wrapped up into 267 pages of a PDF. So, you know, Lance, I think I cut it off at 415 prospects, which is, you know, it's a little different this year because, you know, I know you're struggling with the same thing, just trying to figure out who's actually in this draft and who's not. Like, once you get past the top 150, you know, the guys that we know are draft picks and are in this class, it gets tough because a lot of those guys are going back to school. So, you know, I know for me, that was one of the bigger challenges this year. But I don't know. What would you think of the Beast on release day?
I like it. I like that, you know, one of the things that I really like that you do is that you go into in-depth. So there's the new school way of doing stuff and there's the old school way of doing stuff. And you kind of follow the old school methodology, which is more from the actual standard scouting perspective of you give basic information, you give advanced information, you give analysis. So, you know, I always thought Nolan Araki did a phenomenal job. And then before him, Joel Buschbaum was kind of the godfather of Pro Football Weekly, even before Mel Kiper came out. And by the way, I have a lot of respect for Mel. I think Mel does a great job. And one of the nicest guys that you'll run into, like legitimately nothing's ever gotten to his head from a fame. Like, Mel's awesome. But I like the fact that you treat it like a scouting report. I mean, and it's laid out like a scouting report might look. And so, you know, mine is meant for mass consumption, digital, you know, this, that, and the other, and that's fine. But the layout, I like the layout that you have because it does give you, it makes you feel like you've got something in your hands, even though it's digital copies now, that you can really sink your teeth into, on each individual player. And I think people need to understand, you know, I start basically with the tape. I mean, this year it was a little different because of opt-outs. I was writing guys earlier, Jamar Chase, Rashawn Slater, you know, guys like that, Caleb Farley. So I was getting into them earlier because what they had, Gregory Rousseau, what was on tape was on tape, and it wasn't going to change. So, but usually
actually helpful this year.
Yeah. No, it helped me go faster on higher end prospects, but the problem is, I don't start until really, really start digging in a little in October with some of my write-ups, but I need to have this year's tape. I need to have stuff like that. And of course, season started later. So I started November, and to get through 500 prospects, I put as much time as I can on everyone that I need to know the player. But because you do it longer, like one of the things I really like about you that I don't have time to get as much of this is you really dig in on the things that NFL teams do. And I want you to talk about your process with getting information about the people, the fact-finding that has to go on, because a lot of scouting on the NFL level, people may not realize, it's not sexy. It's not breaking down these throws. A lot of it is you are a private investigator whose job it is to go out and get information about who this person is, to create a profile on them, a full profile, not just a player profile, but a personality profile.
Yeah, that's definitely one of the tougher parts of this, because it's a lot of research and it's a lot of talking to people. And this year, even more so with, because scouts, they haven't been able to be on the road. They've been doing these Zoom calls and finding out information late. So a lot of these guys, information that I usually get during the season or even before that over the summer, just talking to scouts. And that's I usually spend my summers just watching film, getting ready for the upcoming class, going through the 2020 or the previous year's film, and then just being on the phone and trading information with, different scouts and people around the league on these players. And it's a really interesting way of just kind of trading info, and it's really helpful for me and for the people I talk to, just to get a better sense for these guys. And it can be tough, because sometimes you hear things that are not the most flattering, and when that happens, each person, they'll digest it differently, but I know I have to check on it and maybe find out with another person or two other people, are you hearing this? Is this what you this guy doesn't love football? Okay, well, that's an issue. But to what degree is it, he doesn't love football, but still, busts his butt every day? Is it like that? Or he doesn't love football and doesn't even care about putting the work in? There's a big difference there. So,
I think your readers, because it's such a P1, as we say in radio, type of audience, where you've got people who are hardcore, I think that you can afford to say some things, like be honest, not say some things, but be right. Honest about what you have. Where with me on the NFL platform, there are going to be more just average football fans and some people who aren't, immersed in the scouting process, who understand, how the sausage is made, and they can take that as, well, the pearls get clutched if I were to put some of the stuff out there that I hear. And then you do have to balance out, look, is it immaturity? Am I going to hurt this kid in any way, shape, or form? But some of it matters, because I want to have something out there in case a guy falls. If I think a guy is going to fall, I want to include in there that could have some issues with medicals, could have some issues with character, something like that, so that when they go to the scouting report and they say, why did this guy fall? I thought he was supposed to be great. And they read it, they say, oh, okay, well, Lance said that he already had this issue. How do you balance out putting, the line between what you're going to put out there and what you're not going to put out there?
That's the toughest part of this, I think, because some of the stuff is fact. Like, a DUI, that's fact. That happened. That's public record. That's I'm going to put that in there. But some of the stuff happens behind closed doors, and it is tough to know, what is, okay putting out there for public consumption. And then I think you have to ask yourself, how much does it affect your your view of the player. And if it does affect your view, then it becomes important that you include it, because you have to explain why, this player who's really talented, you have more strengths than weaknesses, but he's your 25th best player. You have to try to explain that. Is it because he, but you get into some of these issues that it's tough, some of these guys, they don't put the work in, or, maybe they have trouble digesting concepts and executing and implementing those things. And that's a tough thing to talk about, because you don't want to just flat out and say this guy is not smart. You don't want to flat out say like this guy can't retain information, things like that. Like that's I'm not in the business of, damaging the future careers of 21-year-old players by putting that kind of stuff out there. So I try to be as judicial as possible in terms of what's in there, what's not, without, making sure that if I'm putting something in there, it's not like I'm sugarcoating it. It doesn't have to be beneficial to the player, but I want to make sure that it's fact, or it's very relevant to the player, and not just, one scout told me this and that's automatically going in there. So I can't operate like that. And I know you're kind of the same, obviously, with your reports. you know, you've got a section for, you know, this is what you're hearing from scouts. And, you know, some of the times it's not the most flattering things, but if it's important to the report, then it's probably important to include. Is that fair saying?
Yeah. And I've had some that the editors have.
Right.
Have not been comfortable with putting in there just because of, you know, well, where did it come from and how did you, you know, like, is this, especially when it's an opinion about a player that they're maybe getting behind the scenes. I mean, I think it's interesting. We saw, I think it's great to get into this right now. We have Ted Wynn coming up who we're going to talk quarterbacks with him. You know, Dan Orlovsky from ESPN, he found something out in our space here called the draft space that he wasn't ready for. He got outside of his lane. He was a little heat check. You know, Dan does a good job. He works hard. He hustles. And he shot a little heat check up there. He got something from someone. Either an NFL scout or a team or someone at the program, whatever the case may be. And he got something on Justin Fields. And, you know, the question came up and he had this in his back pocket and he used that information on Pat McAfee's podcast. And what happened was he didn't know the rules of engagement. Like, if you're going to say that, if you're going to have that stuff, and that's fine. We hear that stuff and you have to be careful how you say it, number one. But number two, you want to have enough work done on enough conversations that you have an opportunity to balance the scale a little bit, which he came back with a second video that balanced the scale, but you better have done that work beforehand so that you can balance the scale if you're going to share an opinion. And all he did was share something that he heard from someone. And you and I both know, Dane, we hear stuff like that about players all the time, especially as it pertains to quarterback. There was a tight end that I heard was, you know, not a good learner a couple years ago, and it's been a major issue for him in the NFL. I mean, it's something NFL teams talk about. So while these things are discussed behind closed doors very openly amongst scouts, and no matter who the player is, no matter their race, no matter all scouts are all in this to win championships, and they've got to make the best decisions possible. And there's a great deal of honesty in the public. You still have to temper certain things, and you have to understand what is worth, you know, how much juice is worth that squeeze. Is the juice worth the squeeze? And in Dan Orlovsky's case, he learned a valuable lesson. And when you start going after quarterbacks at major universities, you better have as much information as possible, because that is the hot button issue, is going after a quarterback.
Right. Yeah, no question. And this happened to me last year when I put in one of my reports how a player failed a drug test, and it wasn't public. And
you were accurate. And by the way, it was accurate. And I checked on a GM with a GM. He goes, tell Dane to stand his ground. He's right on it.
Yeah, exactly. And I had. I know I talked to you about it, and I talked to other people about it. I had one of his teammates confirm it to me. But, you know, it's just one of those things that it's a tough thing to do, because it's, you could say it's relevant, but, you know, it's something that you're going to get pushback on. So it's tough. But, you know, overall, I'm very glad to get this thing out there. I think the only thing longer than this draft guide is the honeydew list waiting for me now that I'm back returning to civilization from my wife. So we got three more weeks until the draft. It's going to be fun to see how this all plays out. So another reason I'm excited, we have Ted Wynn on the podcast today. So let's get into that conversation.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The 7-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Excited to welcome in the Athletic's Ted Wynn. Does an outstanding job breaking down mostly NFL, but he dives into the NFL draft space too. You can get his write-ups on the Athletic right now, kind of go a little more in depth with what he saw on the tape. Make sure you're following him at FB_FilmAnalysis on Twitter. Ted, we're in April, a few weeks from the draft. How are you feeling?
Feeling pretty good. I mean, I have a hard time going through, you know, every quarterback, just the quarterbacks. And you guys, you and Lance go through every single position and like over 200 prospects. I don't know how you guys do it, but yeah, I'm feeling good and ready to go.
Awesome. Well, I know you've done a deep dive on, you know, most of these quarterbacks, and it's just such a unique quarterback year. I mean, since you've been really going, you know, doing deep dives into these quarterback prospects, do you remember a quarterback class, anything remotely close to this?
No, I think this is one of the stronger quarterback classes I can remember. Just watching, you know, every one of these guys, I kind of have to, you know, the inner voice in my head tells me like all these guys can't be, you know, that good at all these things. Like there's got to be, I'm trying to like nitpick and find things wrong. But yeah, this is a pretty unique quarterback class, and there could be five guys gone in the first five picks.
Do you think all five are worthy of top 10? We'll say top 10 consideration. Do you think that all five quarterbacks going that high, you can understand it? You can understand where those teams, because there have been in the past where we've seen quarterbacks be overdrafted, or maybe we didn't agree with it. But if all five of these quarterbacks go in the top 8 to 10 picks, do you see that as justified?
I mean, I probably have a lower first round grade on Lance and Mac Jones. But, I mean, it's just a quarterback-needy league, and those guys are going to get drafted top 10. But, you know, I think those guys would be drafted at a lower end of the first round.
Right. And all right, well, let's just start at the top. Listeners, they know how Lance and I feel about these quarterbacks. Yeah, we've been talking about them since the fall. So we really wanted to get, you know, smart football minds that have really gone, you know, deep on these players to better understand them. So we want to get your opinion on these guys, starting at the top, Trevor Lawrence. Do you think he's deserving of all the hype that's been thrown his way?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, this guy has all the size you want in quarterback. He's a lot better runner than people think he is. I mean, you just watch that Ohio State run he had in last season's playoffs when he was outrunning NFL players. He can make all the throws, has enormous arm strength. I mean, he'll have one of the strongest arms in the NFL as soon as he's drafted. He could throw a touch. He could. I think he got better at throwing against the blitz this season. And I think he has some room to get better, too. I mean, I think he could throw with a little more anticipation, but those things are learnable. So I think just when you look at the total scope of what he's done and just all the tools he has, he is one of the best prospects, quarterback prospects that I've ever seen.
You know, one of the things, Ted, that I always look and see where I'll go through the passing map. I go through all the advanced data on prospects to see, you know, what the data tells me. And then I'd go try and marry it to film just to see if there's anything to uncover. And one of the things I uncovered about Fields and Trevor Lawrence this year was he really had a low. I think one of the things that stood out once I looked at the data and looked at the tape was he had a lower than expected completion percentage once he was scrambling out of the pocket and on the move, once he was pressured. Did you recall seeing that? I mean, you might have to be specifically looking for that, frankly, because I obviously was, but it was less than 40% for both of those guys when they were on the move out of the pocket this year, which really surprised me because he is a play extender. Both of those guys are. And I would not have guessed that their numbers would have been that low, but I did see him miss. You know, he wasn't as accurate getting outside of the pocket. I wondered, you know, if that's something you recognized or saw, or if you think that's something you have to be specifically looking for to even, you know, find it within the big haystack of a game.
Yeah, I think that might be something you have to look for specifically. I didn't see it because, you know, when I saw him outside the pocket. I saw him making really difficult throws across his body. I saw him throwing with touch across, you know, on the run. I saw him throwing to the left pretty well. So maybe there are some just kind of balls that got away from him on the run, but I didn't notice it as a big problem. So that it completion percentage outside the pocket is a little surprising to me.
Let's just say 7 years from now, we look back at this draft, and for whatever reason, Trevor Lawrence does not pan out. He does not live up to being that number one pick. What do you think will be the reason why? You know, what are some of the areas that you might have a slight concern, not a huge concern, but a slight concern that, you know, could cause things to maybe go sideways a little bit, at least early for him in his NFL career?
Yeah, I thought the biggest problem was, and I don't think it's a huge problem, but I just didn't think he threw with a lot of anticipation at times. I thought he waited for guys to get into windows or waited till after the break to make some throws. I don't want to sound like I'm nicking him too much for this, but I thought the Clemson offense was just one of the more simple offenses that I've seen quarterbacks run. So maybe there's a question to whether he can handle a more complex offense. But yeah, I would say just anticipation, and there's going to be a bigger, I think there's going to be a bigger gap between what he's asked to do in college and what he will be asked to do in the pros.
Ted, let's stay on that for a second, because that's something we all have to do as we take what we see now. And if you grade on college tape, then you're going to miss a lot, because you have to project, you know, who they're going to be against top level competition, and what will they be outside of their offense, for example, in an NFL offense. And so how difficult do you find it when you're watching, you know, some teams will run a more pro style a passing attack. You know, interestingly enough, Trey Lance is a guy that you get to see something that looks similar to what you'll see in an NFL, obviously, and I know he prepares similarly. How tough is it for you from a projection standpoint to try to project things that you can't see on tape because of the construct of the offense, and then push it forward with a projection of what you think they can or maybe might have a hard time doing?
For me, I just look at the percentage of straight dropback concepts that they're using in college. You know, I think it's much harder to project a guy who's running a ton of RPOs, a ton of bubble screens, you know, and even just a lot of play action plays where, you know, guys are getting wide open. When you look at a guy like Justin Fields and the Ohio State offense, I think the Ohio State offense gets an unfair rap. I mean, they run a ton of just five-step, seven-step concepts where you have to go through your progressions, and those are very translatable to Sundays. But yeah, I think just the frequency of just straight dropback plays is more translatable to the pro game.
Switching gears to Justin Fields, my biggest issue with him was he was a little bit more methodical than you want. And I mean, I would gladly take Justin Fields on my team, draft him in the top 10. Like, I think he's an outstanding talent. But that, for me, you know, when you have to separate these guys, you know, with just the smallest little thing, you know, you're nitpicking, and that's what it comes down to. You have to nitpick these guys. For Justin Fields, that was my slight issue with him, was just how, you know, he was just a little more methodical than what I want to see, you know, compared to, say, a Zach Wilson, who was more spontaneous, but still accurate with his decision. So do you think that's fair for me to say that? Did you see some of the similar things?
Yeah, no, I think it's fair. I think the unfair criticism is calling him a one-read quarterback. I don't even know what that means, but I think he does go through his progressions, and there's multiple examples of him exhausting multiple progressions on plays. But yeah, I agree that he couldn't be a little methodical, and I think part of that is by design, because Quincy Avery, his quarterback coach that he's worked with, said, you know, he said that Ryan Day might encourage his quarterbacks to stay in the first read a little longer because of certain play designs, or they just believe their number one guy is going to, you know, win, and they should take a little time for things to develop. So I agree with you. He can go through his process a little quicker, but I think part of that is the offense, and I think that's something he can get better at. And there are so many examples of him going through multiple progressions, and the Ohio State offense has a ton of concepts that you're going to see on Sundays. They run a lot of Hank, they run Y cross, 9-8-9, and those are pro concepts. So I think the unfair criticism is that he can't go through his progressions, but I think it's fair to say that he can speed up his process a little bit.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's something we saw here in Houston with Deshaun Watson his first couple of years. I mean, he was slow getting through the progressions. He was locking in a lot on DeAndre Hopkins, and why wouldn't you? I mean, DeAndre Hopkins was the ultimate safety blanket. But actually, with DeAndre Hopkins, it kind of forced Watson to be a different quarterback this year, and I mean that in a good way. And I think when you think about quarterbacks, like we'll get to Zach Wilson as well, but I saw him doing some of this, and I start thinking, you know, it's probably intentional. I don't know if he's missing a read and where I should kill him for missing a read. I think he recognizes, and maybe a quarterback who has such significant advantages at wide receiver versus cornerback like Justin Fields, I think sometimes it's easy to stay on a read when you know you have a physical advantage and you're just waiting for the ability to throw it. And then in the NFL, when you know the matchups are going to be a little more even, it makes more sense just to be fluid left to right down the dial in terms of your progressions. I wonder, Ted, if you see some of that where you think just the college game lends itself to, hey, I got a big time player here. I'm gonna wait this right out because at some point I know I've got a monster advantage against that corner.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, there are times when they play a ton of quarters in college, and there's times where the safety and corner will end up bracketing a number one, but the number one is so good, he could beat both those guys if he just wait a second or two longer. So I think that's part of it. I also think there's a lot of downfield option routes in the Ohio State offense where you have to wait on the receiver to break and make a decision for you to make a throw as well. So those do come into play. But I agree with you. In the NFL, when talent's a little more spread out, you do have to go through your reads a little quicker, and that's something that Fields will have to learn as he transitions.
So who is your number two quarterback in this class behind Lawrence?
I have Justin Fields as my number two. I think Zach Wilson has similar issues with his process. It's not, I think they're different issues, but I just think Justin Fields played top competition. He's a high-level athlete that could run the option right away, which will kind of negate some of those growing pains. But, I mean, I don't think, I'm not down on Zach Wilson, but I think most people have him quarterback two. But he is my quarterback three.
Is there a quarterback that you know, when you're watching Wilson, you're watching him make these plays, is there a quarterback maybe that came to mind that you... Well, this reminds me a little bit of this, you know, this someone in the NFL that for something specific that he was doing, did it give you any, you know, flashbacks of someone in the NFL doing similar things?
Yeah, and I don't mean this in a bad way.
Oh,
but
here it comes. I'm the same. I'm with you. Say it.
He reminds me a lot of Sam Darnold.
I was going to say Johnny Manziel.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of Manziel in his game, too.
And I didn't mean that as a slam, either. I meant that as college Manziel. There's a similarity in their game.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I thought Manziel was just like all – he played off script almost, all the time. And I think Wilson doesn't play off script as much as he does. But with Wilson, I have a lot of questions about his pre-snap process. How he processes through progressions. I don't know exactly what he's taught, but when you look at those concepts and how they're usually taught, I don't know where he's looking and why he's looking there and why he's looking back here. And he got away with that a lot because he had a monster offensive line that gave him these huge pockets, where there weren't guys within 7 yards of him sometimes. So he got away with a lot of unusual. Processes when he's reading the field and got away with a lot of things that I don't think he could get away with in NFL. So I think he's a bigger developmental project than people are talking about. But the tools, the traits, the ability to throw off platform and just make those crazy distance throws are tantalizing.
Well, let's just say for a second that Justin Fields... he's not in the conversation, or he's not in this draft class. Trevor Lawrence goes one. The Jets are sitting there at two. I'm the GM of the Jets, and you're my head scout. And I'm asking you, should we take him at number two? Do we feel comfortable with Zach Wilson as the number two pick? He'll be the future of our franchise. Do we like him enough to take him that early?
I mean, if there was no Justin Fields, then I would take Wilson, but I wouldn't say I'd be totally comfortable taking him. Number two, there are a lot of question marks with Wilson.
I'm with Ted, and I don't know if you. I've got a boom bust grade on him of 6.5, which I see the high end stuff. I see the great, you know, the Aaron Rodgers throws, but he's also been emulating Aaron Rodgers since he was a kid. So I mean, this is what he does. He can make. He's probably been able to make those throws for 5 or 6 years prior. I'm curious. One of the things that I had a problem with, Ted, was that you'd see reads, and you know, most notably, this is one that just killed me. It was a 4th and 2 against Coastal Carolina, and it's a little, it's just kind of a little 4th down beater play where it rolls back the other way with a tight end dragging across, and it's wide open, but you have a little corner route deep on the 3rd level. And second, 3rd level, and he tried instead of just in the tight end's literally clapping at him to throw him the ball. It's on this 4th and 1, 4th and 2, and no one's around him, and you can see him look at him, and instead he goes to that deeper throw and ends up throwing it a little short and missing. And it's not the only time that I saw him try to take the 3rd level throw when the 1st or 2nd level throw was the right throw. And I wondered, okay, do I kill him for this, or is this him simply saying, that's Texas State cornerback on. Like, I'm not going to not throw the ball to a guy that I have an advantage, even if I'm hanging it up and letting him make a play. And then when you look at his yards per attempt and the amount of deep balls he threw, it felt like he recognized, hey, I got an advantage here. So I'm struggling, Ted, with, does he not see it? Is he not going to take that? Or is this just a situation where he said, I got the advantage and I'm going to take advantage of it this year?
I think it comes down to situational awareness, too. I like aggression in quarterbacks. I like when they see an opportunity, like they see man coverage, cover one, and have a corner route, and they feel like they like that matchup. I like when they would take it, even if they have a guy open underneath. But if it's 4th and 2, and you know you have man coverage, and you have a leverage advantage, or you might have kind of a rub going, then take the underneath guy. So I like aggression, but it has to be tempered with situational awareness.
Let's talk about Trey Lance here for a minute. Really unique. Obviously, we talk about his resume, 17 career starts, all at the FCS level. Clearly, he was very good in those 17 starts, 17-0, and one interception. It just really, really impressive. But obviously, he's a very young quarterback. You know, colleges recruited him as a safety. This is a guy that's still learning the position. How far away do you think he is to before you would feel comfortable putting him out there as a starter in the NFL?
I think ideally he goes in a situation where he could sit a year. I mean, because when you watch this 2019 tape, you get excited and you say, this could be a first round quarterback, but there are things he needs to work on. And unfortunately, you want to see him have a better 2020 season where he kind of improves on some things, mainly his accuracy. But unfortunately, he didn't get that. So he is a projection. If you just look at the film, Mac Jones has better film than him. But you hear about, you know, how much he loves football and the responsibilities he has at the line of scrimmage and how smart he is. And then you kind of take that and you project and say, you know, with his work ethic, he's going to improve on these things. But just based on a film, you don't know that. That's why I have kind of I would draft him later in the first round. He's going to go top 10. But yeah, I think there are issues. He didn't pass the ball that much in that offense. I think he passed around 15 to 18 times a game. And the accuracy issue is kind of scary. I mean, I think generally he's pretty accurate, but when the ball gets away from him, it really gets away from him. So you want to see those issues get better. But yeah, I mean, right now he's just a projection, and I think he could use the year to sit.
This is a tough one, Ted, because this is a unique year for us, and Dane and I are having to look at guys like Gregory Rousseau and Caleb Farley and, you know, guys who opted out. And, of course, Trey Lance didn't play. It wasn't by choice. But we've got all these guys with such little Penei Sewell. And all of us looked at Trey Lance and studied him and came up with his strengths and weaknesses based on when he was 19 years old. And I'm always having to remind myself about Penei Sewell, about Bobby Brown from Texas A&M is going to be a 20-year-old rookie. Like, Trey Lance looks like a grown man, and we're in draft season, so we need to, you know, we need to try to project him to what he's going to be. But everything we saw on him was he was 19 years old, and so that's why for me, man, this is just such a hard season across the board. And Lance is another one. Love the traits. I mean, the traits are, mm-hmm. to me, he's got he's second to me in terms of the upside potential based on, you know, Wonderland projection beyond, you know, right after Trevor Lawrence. But if you tell me, okay, now show me why you like him so much, that's hard. That's a lot harder for me to just show you plays why I like him so much. And part of it, as you mentioned, Ted, is the offense. It's not designed for him to stand out and be the monster to, statistically. It's not what they are. That's a team-first university and football program.
Yeah, and you know, with the traits, the ball jumps out of his hand. He throws with a ton of velocity, and it just looks so effortless. And as far as just being able to go through reads, you can see him going from read to read quickly. So it's mental traits, it's physical traits. But yeah, like you said, it's a projection. I mean, he's a really young kid, and you're projecting that he's going to be able to work on these problems and get better. But yeah, I mean, you just love the upside with Lance.
I want to introduce Kyle Trask into the conversation now, because we've worked through, I'm trying to remember, we've worked through all the big name quarterbacks, and Trask is a guy that gets, he's an afterthought. I mean, most people don't even talk about him, and I understand it's kind of a big five concept for a lot of people. But Kyle Trask, I do want to point out that if you block it up for Kyle Trask, look, he missed a lot of reads, but if you block it up for Kyle Trask and you try to man up against him, he can wear you out. Now, he had some targets, but Kyle Trask, I thought, threw a beautiful deep ball, had a nice soft touch on the ball, and I thought that when he was just protected in the pocket and he could just work as a guy who was comfortable, I liked what he did. Now, will he be able to do that in the pros? You know, I don't know that everything's going to be so optimal, but I don't know about you guys, but I kind of liked the way that Trask threw when the pocket was clean and he was staying in rhythm. I didn't think he was a bad passer of the football at all.
I liked Trask a lot more than I thought I was going to before watching him. I thought he was a really aggressive thrower. Throw with really good anticipation, maybe the best anticipation thrower in the draft. He does have an average arm. He throws a pretty good placement inside. I thought outside the numbers, his placement wasn't great. And I thought he actually moved pretty well in the pocket as well. I thought it was funny that Florida used so many quarterback options with them. Not that he's a bad athlete. He just doesn't look that fast linearly, but he's a pretty big kid, so maybe you can use him in some options in the red zone in NFL. But yeah, he's a decent athlete, but I don't think his linear speed is going to project him to be that much of an option quarterback on the next level.
He was so comfortable in that offense that really helped him ascend. And I mean, I do have questions about outside of that offense, how he'll do, but I mean, I agree with what you guys are saying. As a pure passer, you know, he does a really nice job. He benefited from a lot of weapons, obviously, in that Florida offense, but the placement of these throws, I mean, he's giving his guys a chance. He's putting it in, you know, optimal spots. I want to go back real quick to Mac Jones. Ted, what were your thoughts when we first started hearing the 49ers trading up to number 3 for Mac Jones? Obviously, we don't know if that's the case. Time is going to tell. But if that ends up happening, you know, what was your reaction to that with the 49ers targeting maybe Mac Jones over a Fields or a Lance?
I mean, I think Mac Jones fits the prototype for what everybody thinks is a Shanahan prototype. But I just think if you listen to Shanahan talk about quarterbacks, especially in the last two seasons and even in his press conference, it seems that he has shifted to his how he looks at quarterbacks, and he wants that bigger, stronger guy that can create second reaction plays, which is why I'm surprised that, you know, so many reporters and news outlets are so sure that Jones is going to be the guy. I mean, you know, I think we know what Mac Jones is. He's a quick processor. I think he's a better athlete than people give him credit for. Not that he's going to be creating plays for himself or anything, but he can get away from some pressure, and he does a good job of throwing with guys in his face. He's very accurate. The thing is, I mean, he's not a great second reaction quarterback. He's a pocket passer. He's accurate, but his arm talent is average. I think, you know, his arm strength might be a little below average. You see a lot of underthrows on film. So that's why I can't give him higher than a late first round grade, just because if you're a pocket passer, I want you to have pretty good arm talent, and I don't think he has that.
Define second reaction. Define what that means to you.
So second reaction to me is if you're getting pressure and you have to go off of your progression and make a play with your legs, or you have to go off script and move away from the top progression and just kind of make a play by looking a guy off or getting outside the pocket and drawing up a flat defender and throwing over his head.
And it's tough because I don't think we know that he can't do that. It's just he didn't have to do that within the context of that offense. When you're talking about the talent around him, the offensive line, the play calling with Sark, I mean, it was the elite of the elite at the college level in terms of a supporting cast. And that really makes it tough when you're trying to figure out what he can and can't do. And when you remove him from that situation, is he reliant on that, or is there more there? And that really does make it tough. All right, before we let you go, I want to touch on some of the pass catchers real quick. First off, Kyle Pitts. Is he one of the best prospects in this draft in your eyes? I mean, is there anything about his transition to the next level that would worry you?
I think he's one of the best prospects in this draft. And I mean, he doesn't have any major weaknesses in his game. He just reminds me so much of Darren Waller. And, you know, I watch a lot of Raider football. I cover one of the main teams I cover. And he, you know, a lot of people make that comparison, but I think it's such an apt comparison. He's so good at speed control. He's unstoppable on slants. I don't think any linebacker is going to be able to run with him. And he can make crazy contested catches, too. And I think if there is a concern, I would say, you know, if he was to get drafted by an outside zone running team, which is so prominent in NFL now, I don't know if he can be relied on as a point of attack blocker because the tight end is such an important part of the blocking scheme there. But I mean, as far as blocking, he gives a lot of effort. He just doesn't have the size to really sustain blocks. But I don't think, you know, you would use him mainly as an inline tight end if you do draft him anyway. So yeah, in short, he is one of the best prospects in this draft.
When you consider position value, obviously we have not seen a tight end drafted top 10 that's really lived up to it. But I would, you know, the argument there is, okay, with Kyle Pitts, we haven't really seen a tight end prospect that looks like Kyle Pitts before. And it's like, you know, you don't pass on Pat Mahomes just because Texas Tech quarterbacks haven't worked out, just because we've never seen a talent like Pat Mahomes. Well, similar with Kyle Pitts. You don't pass on him a tight end in the top 10 just because past tight ends that early haven't panned out because we haven't seen a talent like Kyle Pitts. So if you're, you know, the Falcons at 4, the Bengals at 5, do you think that Kyle Pitts, you can absolutely justify making that pick?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, for the Bengals, I would like them to draft an offensive lineman. I just think that, Joe Burrow, your number one pick, is coming back from an injury. And even if, you know, you feel like you have your tackle set, which I don't, I think they can still upgrade the talent there. I think you need some depth in case things don't work out, or you might be able to kind of shuffle that offensive line around. But, I mean, if they pick Pitts, I'm not going to bat an eye. I think getting a weapon that could to get open that quickly will be beneficial for Burrow as well.
Yeah, he's a cheat code. I mean, there's just nothing else to say about him. All right, last question for you. The two Alabama receivers, did you come away looking at Jalen Waddle and Devontae Smith liking one over the other? Do you think there's a gap there? Which one of the two was your favorite and why?
I find myself going back and forth with both receivers a lot. I liked Waddle better because, I mean, I just don't, you don't see guys that can separate like Waddle on film often, and he can make contested catches. I think he plays pretty strong for a guy with his size, which is, when you're talking about speed guys with Waddle's size, the main concern is play strength, and I think Waddle does run through reroutes. He does run through contact. I mean, he's not going to truck anybody, but I think that's the biggest thing you want to look for with these smaller guys, and he does that. He runs a lot of downfield routes. He's not just a bubble screen receiver, but when you look at Devontae Smith, he just does everything well. His size is not a big concern to me because he plays strong on film. I think right now I'm leaning towards Smith, even though I had Waddle over him earlier, but they're so close. I don't think you go... I think scheme fit does matter for Waddle a little bit more than Smith, though.
Who do you like better, Ruggs or Waddle, coming out? I mean, if you can rewind your thoughts on Ruggs and remember, because I know you saw him quite a bit this year, who do you think is the better pro prospect when they were coming out, Ruggs or Waddle?
Oh, Waddle easily. Okay. I think even though Waddle didn't have a ton of film, I kind of knew about Waddle as a freshman, and I wasn't super high on Ruggs. I thought there were concerns with his play strength, and he got against physical corners. He struggled a bit, and it ended up being one of the main reasons why he didn't produce more as a rookie. So I think Waddle's a much better prospect than Ruggs.
Yeah, and it's fascinating. There's definitely a split. You know, Lance, I know you prefer Devontae Smith. I prefer Jalen Waddle, but not by a lot.
I mean, yeah, exactly. They're neck and neck, yeah.
They're both really, and that's how it is across the league. You talk to some people and it's Smith, others it's Waddle, but you know, they're both universally well liked. All right, Ted, this was awesome. Really, really appreciate your perspective. Make sure everybody you're following him on Twitter. Again, that's at FB underscore film analysis. Check out all his work on The Athletic. It's awesome. It's really helpful stuff to add just another layer of context to these guys. So, Ted, we'll talk to you next time.
Thanks, Ed.
Thanks for having me on, and I appreciate all the work you guys do.
Before we go on, excited to share with you a new podcast from The Athletic. It is called Shattered: Hope, Heartbreak, and the New York Knicks. Shattered is a documentary-style podcast series on the past 20 years of the Knicks. Hosted by hip-hop legend Chuck D from Public Enemy, this series tells all the wild, crazy stories from the past two decades of the Knicks under team owner James Dolan. Shattered reveals never-heard-before stories about Dolan, the Knicks, and the NBA. Some of the people interviewed include former Knicks Patrick Ewing, Penny Hardaway, Jamal Crawford, Nate Robinson, former Knicks coaches and executives like Donnie Walsh, Jeff Van Gundy, Dave Fizdale, Jeff Hornacek, and then non-basketball voices like Eddie Falco, Andrew Yang, Wyatt Cenac, Adam Pauly, Andrew Schultz. Listeners will learn about what caused the end of the 90s Knicks, what is it like to be banned from the Garden, the Knicks' failed pursuit of LeBron James in the summer of the decision, why Carmelo Anthony and Jeremy Lin couldn't coexist, the unusual way David Fizdale and Kristaps Porzingis began their relationship, and what Garden insiders say it is like to work for James Dolan. New episodes of Shattered are released every Tuesday. Search for Shattered: Hope, Heartbreak, and the New York Knicks, wherever you get your podcasts. All right, that'll do it for this week's Prospects to Pros. You can find Lance on Twitter at Lance Zierlein. I'm at DP Brugler. As always, please subscribe, rate, or comment. We really appreciate it, and we'll talk to you next week.
Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.